benefits because it's a major tool to contribute to great movements of God. Gospel patrons are fueling ministries, churches, leaders, and great works around the world. But gospel patrons is also defensive. We underestimate the love of money. We underestimate the temptation to love it and own it and find identity and security in our success, our wealth, and our position. We underestimate that. We underestimate the pressure of our culture and this world, which is always seeking to increase our standard of living and having us live for ourselves alone. And so we need a defense. We need to stop against that. And I believe gospel patrons is that, because where your treasure is, your heart will be also. And so as we unleash our treasure, we unleash our hearts to be about the things that God is about. It's offense and it's defense. And I believe our generation needs both to free us from the love of money, to pursue the great things God is doing in the world today. That's what gospel patrons is about. What if we could see business people and young professionals all over the global cities of the world say, I'm not here to make a name for myself. I'm not here just to chase a paycheck, a dollar amount, a retirement fund. I am here because God has uniquely planted me in this city to make a difference for the gospel. What if we could see that happen? And what if gospel patrons could contribute to that?
Well, good morning. How's everybody doing today? You guys good? You with me at 11:30? Come on now. So it's always good to wrap up our morning services here at our 11:30 service. So I'm glad that you guys are with us. And do me a favor. I know we have a few people listening in Spanish right now. So would you just welcome them to the service? We're glad that you are with us. All right. And man, I don't know about you, but for me, it is like the best weekend of the year. This is my favorite weekend every year, and the reason why is it's Augusta weekend, or what you might call the Masters weekend, and as a golfer, I just love 4 days, 6 hours at a time watching TV. So it's beautiful for that, but I can add another level onto that. Last night was UFC 300, and I know that probably doesn't mean anything to probably most of you, but my wife is the biggest UFC fan ever, all right? Like in the history. So for her, the best gift I can ever give her is to hit the button on purchase the pay-per-view. So last night we purchased the pay-per-view and we spent 6 hours watching guys pummel one another. It was awesome. I mean, so good. She goes, I got snacks. We got chocolate donuts, powdered donuts, chips, like ice cream. It was like a Super Bowl party, UFC 300, and it was an incredible night. Again, I know most of you don't watch, but there was a fight between a guy named Max Holloway and Gaethje that was unbelievable. You with me? Did you watch it? Unbelievable, okay? I mean, these guys, you talk about gospel patrons, offense, defense. There was times they're playing offense or playing defense. And then finally at the end of the fight, 5 rounds in, 10 seconds left, Max Holloway has this thing won in the books. He doesn't even need to fight anymore. But he looks at Gaethje, points at the center of the ring and says, come on. And for 10 seconds, they stood there, 100% melee, just knocking on each other. And with 1 second left, Gaethje catches one right here, out cold. And I pulled a Rogan, and I was like, no, and like slapped my wife. It was awful. It was awful, but it was also awesome, okay? We had the time of our life. I say that for this reason alone. Those guys and gals who do it, they understand sacrifice. And what I want to teach us today is sacrifice. It goes back to the gospel patron video, which says that gospel patrons, which is the idea of supporting the gospel, living in a way with your financial life and your personal life that supports the gospel, is both offensive and defensive. Meaning offensive, you're taking ground for Jesus. Defensive, you're guarding yourself against the love of money and possessions and things like that. So true, but it's also found in sacrifice. That I play offense and defense because I learned to sacrifice. And we sacrifice all the time. Anybody who's married in the room, you make sacrifices. If you don't, then your marriage is going to struggle. Anybody got kids? Anybody? Anybody with me? How many of y'all got kids? Raise your hand. All right, 24/7 sacrifice, right? Especially babies, right? Like I get like all the time. That there's sacrifices we make. We're dating somebody, you're going to make sacrifices. You got a job, there are sacrifices. You play a sport, there's sacrifices. When it comes to the gospel, do you make sacrifices? Do you make sacrifices like Lady Huntington? Now, I know when I say Lady Huntington, probably majority of us, I don't know if anybody in the room even knows who Lady Huntington is. All right, but she's a lady that you'll find in this book, Gospel Patrons, that we've been using as a resource. And she was alive back in the 1700s. She was a very wealthy lady, like loads of money, one of the richest in London at the time. And then her husband died. And then a couple years later, her kids died. And she found herself grieving as a wealthy widow, looking at her life going, what am I going to do now? What am I going to do with my life? Because I'm in pain, I'm in loss, I don't know my purpose, I've lost my husband, I've lost my kids. And she's standing there, she's sitting there in her wealth, and she makes a decision, I'm going to live sacrificially for the kingdom of God. And she made a decision to use her financial means and her personal means to support the gospel. One way she did that is she said, I'm just going to support pastors. That she was going to make it her opportunity or her job to partner with pastors so they could go out and preach the gospel. One of the pastors that she sponsored was a guy named George Whitefield. Now, that might be a name you recognize. George Whitefield was instrumental in the first great awakening of America. Back in the 1700s, there was kind of a revival that went all the way from New England, all the way down through Florida, through South Carolina, like the whole East Coast. And George Whitefield was one of the guys that was instrumental in preaching the gospel in America. How did he do it? Lady Huntington. See, Lady Huntington had come in contact with George Whitefield there in London, and she had struck up a friendship, and she'd actually said, I want to support you in your mission. I want to sponsor you. I want to make it financially possible for you to go wherever the Lord calls you to go. But one of those places is, I want you to come and preach to my friends. And he agreed. So on Tuesday and Thursday nights, anytime he was in London, he would go to her house. The first gathering started this way. She called all of her friends. Now remember, she's one of the wealthiest in London. So her friends are people in Parliament. Her friends are dukes and duchesses and the wealthy of the wealthy. And she said, I'm having a dinner party. So all the ladies put on their finest evening gowns. The guys put on their suits and their white wigs. I still don't understand why they wore white wigs, but they did, right? And they all showed up for this fancy dinner. And then at the end of the dinner, she said, I have a guest of honor and I want him to share with you the gospel. And that's what she would say, and bring him out. And then he would preach for 30 minutes, an hour. They would talk, and he would present the gospel. And many of the elite in London came to Christ because of Lady Huntington. That she didn't just do that, but she also helped financially and personally establish, plant, and build 116 churches throughout England. It's crazy. One lady grieving who said, what can I do? And she took what she had and she sacrificed it for the kingdom. And the great awakening of America and of London happened through her. And it is my prayer that we'll look at her life and we'll say, man, I want to be like her. I want to live like her. I want to sacrifice like her. And I know this is what will happen in a lot of our minds. We'll be like, well, that sounds great, Josh, but I don't have that kind of money. I don't have that kind of influence. If I'm throwing a party, it's probably not going to be the kind of party that politicians and leaders and the wealthy of the wealthy are going to come to. My party going to look a little different. Which is fine, because it doesn't matter what you have. Or maybe I should say that differently. It doesn't matter what you don't have. It matters what you have. See, too often we get focused on what we don't have, and what God is calling us to do is sacrifice what we do have. And you might be in a position like Lady Huntington, and if that's the case, sacrifice what you do have. Or you might be like a little kid with his sack lunch. See, there's a story in the Bible about a little kid. It's actually recorded in all four Gospels, or what we call biographies of Jesus. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. It's a miracle that Jesus did, but he did it through the sacrifice of a little boy. And I want to tell you this story, and it'll be up on screen. We'll kind of go through it together. Here's what it says. Matthew chapter 14. It says, when Jesus heard what had happened, he withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. Hearing of this, the crowds followed him on foot from the towns. All right, here's what that means, is that Jesus had heard that his cousin, John the Baptist, had been beheaded. So he wanted to go away by himself and grieve, so he hopped in a boat. But by the time he got to the other end of the seashore, that people had gathered around. So this is what happened. When Jesus landed and saw, hold on to that thought, that word is really important, a large crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began to heal them and teach them and preach to them and minister to them. As evening approached, the disciples came to him and said, this is a remote place and it's already getting late. Send the crowds away so they can go to the villages and buy themselves some food. Jesus replied, they do not need to go away. You give them something to eat. Well, like, I want you to think about this, that they're like, hey, Jesus, a lot of people here, like so many, 5,000 men was counted. That doesn't include women and children. So you can imagine probably 10,000, maybe 15,000 people are there listening to Jesus. And Jesus says, well, why don't you give them something to eat? And they're like, man, we don't have anything. Like, and by the way, this is what Philip said. Philip answered him, it would take more than a half year's wages to buy enough bread for each one to even have a bite. And then Andrew said this. He said, here's a boy with five small barley loaves, basically biscuits, and two small fish. But how far will they go amongst so many? And I don't know if in that moment Andrew's like sarcastic and going, well, hey, here's a boy with a couple biscuits and some fish. Good luck, Jesus. Or if he's like with a little bit of lack of faith going, hey, here's a boy. I don't know. I don't know. But I do know how Jesus answered. Jesus answered, perfect. That's exactly what we need. And I want you to think about that. If you were a disciple in that time, 5,000, 10,000 people behind you, and you're like, Jesus, we need to feed them. And Jesus goes, well, we got five loaves and two fish. That's exactly what we need. And he says, it's perfect. You'd be going, what's perfect? And then imagine this. Jesus takes it, gives thanks to the Father, blesses it, breaks it, and hands it to you and says, now go feed the people. You might look down at your hand and go, he's lost his mind. Like, think about that for a second. Like, if I had five little biscuits up here and I said, okay, guys, we're going to eat. Y'all be going, that ain't lunch. That might be communion, but that ain't lunch. Like, I'm going to Bojangles, right? Imagine being the guy, maybe you're Peter, maybe you're Andrew, something like that, and you're looking at Jesus and you get the food and you go, and you're like, okay, now what? He goes, turn around and feed the guys. You're like, no, because I know the first guy behind me, I saw him. He's 6'7". He looks like baby Goliath. And he's going to look at my food and be like, that's it. You're going to get mobbed. But then what happened? They started passing out the food, and the more they passed it out, the more they multiplied. Now listen to this. Jesus did the miracle, but the miracle happened when the disciples released what Jesus had put in their hands. And that's what will happen in our lives as well. when we release and sacrifice what Jesus has given us. They passed it out so much so when they got done, there was 12 basketfuls left over that they were able to carry back up. The miracle happened because of a sacrifice. So here's what I want you to catch from this story. It's pretty simple. Three little things. One, gospel patrons see a need. That people who support the gospel, people who support Jesus, they see a need. You'll see it in the story. It starts with Jesus. That Jesus, remember, he was in the boat, that he was on his way to grieve and to be by himself, but he saw the people. And remember what it said? They were lost and hurting like sheep without a shepherd. When Jesus saw them, his heart hurt for them because they were hurting. The disciples saw the people, and what they saw was that they were hungry, that they were physically hungry. The young boy, what he saw was a need for some food. Gospel patrons see a need. And guys, let me just be real personal with you for a second. Man, I see a need. When I look at church, when I look at all of us who come and worship together, when I look at families in my neighborhood, when I look at athletes that I get to work with at Coastal, when I look at our greater Myrtle Beach area, when I look at the globe, you know what I see? I see people who are hurting. I see people who are hurting mentally. I see people who are hurting physically. I see people who are hurting spiritually. I see people who are walking through life like sheep without a shepherd. And this is what I think. I don't think it's just me. I think every one of you could look at your circle of influence and you could see it as well. I don't think you have to go very far in your neighborhood to see some people who are hurting. I don't think you have to look at very many families to see some families in need. I don't think you have to look at your dorm room and look very far without seeing some people who are struggling. That we gotta open our eyes and we gotta see that there's people who are hurting, and that they're hungry. And I feel like I just see people who are hungry right now in life, hungry for grace, hungry to find forgiveness and mercy. Because listen a minute, we've all made some mistakes. And there's those of us who are walking through this world just going, man, I need to find forgiveness and help through this pain of a mistake. I see people who are hungry for truth, hungry for something of real substance, that we've built our life on ideologies that are just floating, that are fading, that are falling away. And I think people are just looking for some real truth right now. And this is what I believe. This is what I see, and this is what I believe, that if people are hurting and people are hungry, then we have, as the church, must do something about it. Are you with me? Like I think we got to do something about it. We have to do something personally about it. We have to do something collectively about it. And that's why as a church, we're in the middle of this campaign to say, we're going to make room for one more. Now, let me just say this. If you're a guest here, man, I'm so thankful you're here. And I'm going to say a few things over the next minute or so that I want you to listen to. And I want you to see, that's a church that's on the move. All right? That's a church that's doing something. But I really especially want you to hear this if you call the Rock home. That we got to make room for one more. Because there's people who are hurting. There's people who are hungry. And they need to find grace and truth and community and help for their pain. And the way we're going to do that is make room for one more. I talked about this real quick last week, that we got to make room for one more here at our Conway campus. that we got to expand. And I know I'm throwing this little map up here, and you won't be able to see it real well. The writing's small. Not everybody will be able to read that. But let me point out some things in that, okay? That if you look over here in this blue, I want you to see this right here. First, I want you to see that I found a little laser on my iPad, and it makes me really happy, okay? Like, normally, I'm over here doing this kind of stuff. Now I get to do this also, all right? Little things in life make me happy, all right? But that blue, that's a new parking lot. And I said it last week, parking lots aren't sexy, but the bottom line is this. If people can't find a place to park, then they're going to have a hard time finding a seat to sit in, which means they might not hear the message of Jesus. So parking lots matter. So we're going to fix our parking lot, do that. This area right here, that's kind of like an outdoor lobby, community space, green space. It's going to be awesome. Too hard to explain from stage, see me in the lobby afterwards. Our auditorium here, we're going to add about 300 to maybe upwards of 400 seats. We're going to knock out this wall back here, and we're going to rearrange this room, and we're going to do some great stuff. But to do that, we got to add some kids' space right there. We got to do that. We got to make room for one more. Got to make room for one more to find help, to heal from hurt, and to find some grace and truth. At our Aner campus, that we're remodeling 6,000 square feet, that there are kids that need a space to worship, that they are totally out of room, that's already happening. The Conway thing is kind of happening, all right? Obviously, it's going to take time to redo a parking lot and to knock out a wall, but if you walk down the kids' hallway today, there's already construction happening and wood going up as we divide some rooms, all right? That's happening. In Aner, that's happening. It's already happening that the building that we're leasing there, the owners are remodeling the front half of it so that then we can go in and do what we need to do for kids. At our South Strain campus, we are actively looking for property all the time. Around the county, we got to plant more churches. We have to. I was up on the North End yesterday, and I was talking to a guy, and he was asking me about the church and about our campus, and he goes, well, where are you going to go next? And I said, I don't know, but I know this area needs a church. This area needs a campus. That has got to happen. Right? There's churches up there, there's good churches there, but there's not enough, and there's not a church that's doing what we're doing in that area, that we gotta make sure it happens. And whether it's with the Rock name on or we help somebody plant that direction, it's needed because there's people on the North End. You have friends on the North End. We have church members on the North End that are saying, man, we got to do something in our neighborhood. And then there's places around the world that need it. That we've got to help make space for one more, room for one more. Well, how do you do that? Sacrifice. It comes down to sacrifice. Again, I want you to think about Jesus. Jesus sacrificed. He wanted a time to grieve, but he was willing to sacrifice and minister to the people. That the young boy was willing to sacrifice it. He had his sack lunch. He had those five little loaves of bread. He had those two fishes. He said, here it is. It's not much, but whatever I've got, you've got, Jesus. Do a miracle with it. The disciples, on the other hand, they were sitting there going, man, we don't know what to do. People are hungry, but we don't have food. People are hungry, but we can't help. Here was the problem in that moment. The disciples were focused on what they didn't have, but the little boy was focused on what he did have. And if we want to make a difference with our lives and in this world, we have to stop focusing on what we don't have, and we've got to focus on what we do have, because when we sacrifice what we do have, Jesus can do a miracle. It's that simple. Jesus can do a miracle. So I want to encourage you, look at your life and say, what do I have? Do I have a couple biscuits? Do I have a whole bakery? Sacrifice. Am I like Lady Huntington? Am I like the boy with the sack lunch? Both of them gave sacrificial gifts. So I want to ask you, what do you have financially? What do you have personally? Well, let's talk about it financially when it talks about giving to the Lord. And I know sometimes when I talk about giving, people are like, oh. Listen, If we were all struggling with adultery and with sexual sin, then I would preach about the covenant of marriage. I would preach about sexual purity. And I do. If we were all struggling with bitterness and backbiting and gossip and slander, then I would preach about it. And I do. And I think in the area of giving, there's a lot of us that struggle in this area. So I preach about it. Because I think for some of us, let me say this, off a national average, most of us, this is again national average, I don't know personally, but I can at least say national average, the majority of people who go to church don't give to the Lord at all. Zero. That's a sin. I just want you to hear that. If you have faith in Jesus, you don't give anything to Jesus, it's a sin. And I don't want to let you or help you walk in that. I want to help you walk in it in a different way. So I want to encourage you to give in some form, in some fashion, to give. Let me help you this way. Because again, for some of us, we don't. Maybe you've never given to the Lord at all. Others of us give regularly. Let me show you what I believe is a map, or maybe I could call it this way, a path of giving. I'd call it this way, that this is the path of giving, that if you look down here, we have the gift and it takes us to gospel patrons, okay? So that's a path from gift to giving to tithe to sacrifice. It gets us to this place that we would call a gospel patron. For some of us, we need to give a gift. For some of us, that's where we need to start. For some of us, maybe you've never given a gift before, give a gift to the Lord. For others of us, we need to get to giving, where we say, I'm going to start giving to the Lord. Every now and then I give a gift, but I want to give to the Lord, which simply means this, a regular habit of giving. If I give a gift every now and then, that's great, it's a gift, but I would say you need to get to a regular habit of giving, where you look at your own personal income and say, now how do I set this up regularly? I know at The Rock, most of us do it through online giving. But then I want to get you from a giving to a tithe. That Jesus speaks of the tithe. He says that we should tithe. So I want to encourage you to tithe. To tithe means to give 10%. Okay? That's what tithing means. If you give less than that, that's giving. If you tithe, that's tithing. Jesus says we should tithe. So I'm going to encourage us to start to get to that part. All right? And you'll always find there's a blessing that comes with that. I love what one of our church members said. One of our church members said this: by being faithful in my giving, I have found that 90% of my income will go much further than 100%. And I can tell you, and I know anybody else who tithes will tell you, they have found the same. But I'm even going to encourage you to go past that, from a tithe to a sacrifice. What does that even look like? Well, maybe it's going, I'm not just going to tithe. I'm going to try to go more than that. I'm going to give 11% or 11.5%. For my wife and I, we're always looking at, can we add a little percentage point? Maybe it's giving an extra gift. Maybe you got a tax return different than you thought this year, and you're like, man, I want to give to the Lord. Or maybe you have some property. I want to give to the Lord. Or maybe you have a different kind of resource that you say, I want to give to the Lord. And here's what I have found, and this is what another church person said. A church person said this: every penny is the Lord's, and his exchange rate is unbelievable. Which I think is so true. When you give to the Lord, his exchange rate is unbelievable. So I want to encourage you on a path of giving. And I'll tell you this as a church. Now, this is where I get back to those who call The Rock home. We are trying to raise a certain amount of money. Over the next 2 years, we're trying to raise $12 million. Now, I know for a lot of us, we go, wow, that's a big number. It is. But in a church our size, you got to remember, we have several thousand people who attend multiple campuses. that dollar amount is not a lot. It's a lot, but it's not a lot for the whole. But now on a personal level, I would say it this way. That I need to look at, what can I sacrifice financially? What can I sacrifice personally? And what I mean by that is your time, your energy, your effort. Remember Jesus? Like, he wanted to be alone, but he's like, these people need me. So he sacrificed time. He sacrificed energy. He sacrificed effort. Some of you listening would go, man, can we just go back and talk about money? Because I'd much rather give up my money because I can make more money, but I can't make more time. That the time can be hard. But the reality is, we got to sacrifice. And when we do, it brings a blessing. It brings a blessing. When you sacrifice your time, maybe helping a neighbor, when you sacrifice your energy or your effort, helping somebody who's struggling mentally, emotionally, needing to talk, then it brings a blessing. When I sacrifice my finances, it brings a blessing. Malachi says it this way. It's Malachi chapter 3. It says, bring the whole tithe into the storehouse, that there may be food in my house. Test me in this, says the Lord Almighty, and see if I will not throw open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing that there will not be room enough to store it. Think about it. When I sacrifice for the Lord, financially, personally, he will bless you. Look at what Jesus said. These are his words. He said, give, and it'll be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, poured into your lap. The way you give will be the way it is given back to you. See that verse. That it's a good measure, that it's pressed down, that it's shaken together, that it's overflowing. Think about that. That's how I want to see Jesus in my life. That's how I want to use my life. I want Jesus to take what I've given in him and sacrifice, and I want him to multiply it. And listen, I don't know about you, but that verse said he's going to pour it onto me. I don't want just... You know what I mean? Like that's not what I'm looking for in life. You know what I'm looking for in life? Let's go, Jesus. Let's go. I want to say, Jesus. I want you to pour out your blessing. And I want him to pour out the blessing on our church. A great way to see the blessing of God is the sacrifice. That this little boy who was just going to hear Jesus teach saw thousands of people blessed, and he received a blessing as well. See, I want you to make sure of this. It wasn't just that he got the blessing. He got to eat. He got to take leftovers home. He is talked about 2,000 years later, but he helped make a blessing possible for others. And then in turn, he was blessed as well. I want to see that in your life. I want to see that in my life. I want to see that in our church. Which leads me back to this question. What do you have? What do you have? And will you sacrifice it? Whatever financially... Again, it might be Lady Huntington. It might be a little boy with a sack lunch. Both sacrificed and gave equal gifts because they're both sacrificial gifts. What do you have? Time. sacrifice, connections, relationships with neighbors, classmates, teammates. Will you sacrifice? What do you have? A position at school, on the team, at work. Will you sacrifice? What do you have? A church home. People you want to reach. Will you sacrifice? Will we look at the example of this little boy? Will we look at the example of Lady Huntington? Will we look at the example of Jesus who left heaven? He saw a need and he left heaven and he came to this earth. And he said, I will sacrifice my time, my energy, my effort, my life, my breath, and my blood. I will do something. Jesus did something. Lady Huntington did something. The little boy did something. They all sacrificed. And because of that, we get a blessing. And I want to see you be blessed. So don't focus on what you don't have. Sacrifice what you do have. And I'm going to ask you to do me a favor then. With that in mind, if I just get everybody to stand up, and we're going to go into a time of response. And during this time, what will you sacrifice? For some of you, maybe it's coming to Jesus and saying, I need him as my Lord and Savior. What will you sacrifice? Will you sacrifice your heart? Will you give him your soul? Will you say, Jesus, I'm all in? If you need to pray with somebody about that, come to the Connect Corner. Maybe your sacrifice today is, man, I'm going to take a step of baptism. I'm new to faith. I'm going to take a step of baptism. Or I've had faith forever. I've just never done that. And you were planning on it, but maybe today's the day. And yeah, you might go home a little wet. So will I. What are you willing to sacrifice? Maybe it's time to take communion. I want to encourage you during this time, say, look inward and say, what do I have? What am I willing to sacrifice? Let's do that right now.